Yisker. Yisker, but Yisker for all those of us who are fortunate enough, Baruch Hashem, not to have to say Yisker. It's sort of a mysterious part of davening if you've never said Yisker before, because everyone leaves. So the truth is, if there was any one logistical change that I could make to the way we direct traffic, so to speak, in shul davening procedures any time of the year, so it might be to suggest some other way to figure out what to do during Yisker for, again, Baruch Hashem, those of us who are not saying it. The common minhag in just about any shul that I've seen, and you can tell me if it's done differently elsewhere, is that those who are not saying Yisker leave the shul, and they wait until Yisker is concluded. So I have to admit, for most people, you know, it can be a much needed break from a long day of davening shul on Yom Kippur, especially in yeshiva. Over here, you know, for some guys, it's the few short minutes you may need to run home to check on your wife who may be pregnant, taking care of the children and need some help. You know, that's a critical chesed. And those extra few minutes can be very, very useful. There's some people who just need to get some fresh air. In yeshiva davening, very often there's very little break, almost no break. But, you know, to be honest, most of the time the Yisker said, and for most people out there, the need to walk out of shul is not so pressing. And it's questionable, to say the least, if the time is always used wisely. You know, Chas v'Shalom, I'm not trying to add a kitchen to Klal Yisrael, but just as a muscle, you know, anyone, you know, thinking about going to the Kotel on Tisha B'Av. So it's a big scene on a day when we're supposed to be much more isolated and internalizing. You know, we're not even supposed to, you know, greet each other. And at the holiest place on the holy day. So it is the place to be. And there's a kira value, and there's great inspiration that emerges from the throngs of people who again, they came to the right place. But again, it's an illustration of a set of circumstances that still requires proper thought and planning in order to capture the full value of the important moments, such as Tisha B'Av at the Kotel, such as the middle of Yom Kippur and davening right before Musaf. And I think at least amongst ourselves, we can try to be introspective and think more carefully about how we spend that time during Yisker. So one thing which isn't really the focus of what I was going to talk about, but very important as well. I think I mentioned a story to some of you. Maybe I shared it with the group over the summer. I was in a small town in Arizona. And I found myself on the first morning that I arrived there at the Minyan in Shul. And there was maybe seven or eight people there at the time that you know, the Zman for the tefillos had arrived. And the rabbi walked into the shul, hadn't put on his talis for tefillin yet, and didn't even greet me, not that I have talis, I wasn't insulted in any way, but he looked at me, came over and said, "Are you a Kaddish Seir?" So later he explained to me that, you know, it was a little bit of a jarring question, and that was my greeting to the neighborhood. But he told me, you know, he apologized for not giving me a warm welcome, not that I was looking for one, but simply because, at least in you know, in the shul, if there was someone saying Kaddish, then that would maybe pace their davening differently. They would wait for a 10th person to show up, as opposed to continuing Pesuk of the Zimra and be okay if the if it wasn't until Yishtabach and Baruch Hu that they had a minion. But in any case, when he asked me if I was a Kaddish Seir, so I said no, and then he moved on. And later I came over to him and I said, I regretted the fact that when you asked me point blank, "Are you a Kaddish Seir?" I should have said, "Baruch Hashem, no." I should have said it with a little more feeling. It's not just a routine question to reflect on the schus to have Baruch Hashem parents and family. It's not something to take for granted, not something to simply say yes to, but should be an opportunity for praise for the Ribbono Shel Olam. So it's something we should all think about whenever the people saying Kaddish in shul, that we should give Shavach Hodah for every day, every moment that we have our family and our parents. When it comes to Yisker, so I think in the biography of Rebbetzin Kanievsky, Rebbetzin Kanievsky's wife, so she would give a similar piece of advice to those who have parents, Baruch Hashem, that at the time of Yisker, better for them to use that time, not to hang out in the lobby, schmoozing, not to use the time during Yisker to waste, but rather to offer tefillah to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKor HaTov, for the fact that the individual has parents, and also to focus on the HaKor HaTov that the individual owes to the parents. So I think that's one very useful and practical way to spend at least a couple minutes during Yisker time. Yeah, go ahead, Josh.
I went to Meir Yisrael for whatever for one of the holidays, and during Yitzkor they make you say Tehillim for everyone that gave a plaque.
Wow.
So okay. That's
a good use of time. That's what we should be doing. Great. Okay. So anything that uses that time effectively, but especially in the context of one's family, one's parents, it's an opportunity to chaperim and use it wisely. But I want to share a different idea with you, which I think also has important implications. And it's an idea about Yitzkor that was mentioned a number of years ago in our yeshiva. There was the occasion of the yahrzeit, naskara, the 50th yahrzeit of one of our Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Paleyev, who was a very beloved and revered Rosh Yeshiva for many, many years. Again, he passed away in the 1950s, and I'm sorry, 1960s. So there are very few people who still remember him, although Rabbi Blau recalled that he was the first Rebbe to welcome him to Yeshiva when he came as a teenager. So Rav Paleyev was remembered by Rav Zacharia Center, who never passed away this past year. From Teaneck. He was the founder of the Chavkei, and he married the granddaughter of Rav Paleyev, and as a result had many memories that he shared with the Talmidim. And in particular, one thing that Rabbi Center discussed was that Rav Paleyev once showed him the words of the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. These words that we find in the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch are not only in the Kitzur. Kitzur, as usual, is summarizing earlier sources, Rishonim and Achronim. But we'll read it from the Kitzur together, to get a sense of what the focus is. Maskir Neshamos Yom Kippur. So he begins by saying, we remember Neshamos, we remember people who have passed on Yom Kippur. Mishum, why? Why is Yom Kippur a time that's most appropriate for Yizkor? So number one, Zechir Zameisim, Mishabra Machaneel, Leibu Shaladim. Rishonim say that it's obvious when we think about death, when we think about mortality, that people don't live forever, that people who are special to us are no longer around. So that's a humbling thought, and that makes a person consider that we don't live forever, and we have a task and we have a mission to accomplish on this world, and we shouldn't waste our time here. The Gemara says that the person should be Yazkir Yom HaMisa. That'll encourage him when he's distracted, when the Yitzhar is overcoming him. It should be Yazkir Yom HaMisa, because that helps bring a person into focus what his responsibilities are. That's reason number one. That's reason number one. And that's what the Kitzur brings from the Rishonim. But Olafi Shagam HaMesim Tzuchim Kapar. Now, this is very interesting. The other reason why we mention on Yom Kippur those who have passed on is because the Mesim also need Kapara. Even those who are no longer with us require Kapara just as we do. Kedisa B'Sifri Kapar L'Amcha Yisrael Elu HaChayim Asher Padisa Elu HaMesim. So Pasuk in Devarim, in the end of Shoftim, regarding the Egla Rufa, We say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kapar L'Amcha Yisrael, bring a kapara for your nation, Klal Yisrael. That refers to the Chayim, and Asher Padisa, those who you have redeemed, meaning those, for instance, that you've redeemed from the Yitzias Mitzrayim, right? People who are no longer with us. Elo HaMesim, they also need a kapara. Malam Yishim Mesim Shukum Kaparas. That's what the Medrash tells us. We'll come back to that. Nojim Tzedak Bavuram. There's an Inyan Tadafka on Yom Kippur when we mention the Neshamos to pledge tzedakah on their behalves. The very, very end of Parshas Tetzaveh, very, very end of Parshas Tetzaveh, talks about the avoda of Aaron HaKohen on Yom Kippurim. This last pasuk, it's Perek Lamed pasuk Yud, V'chiper Aaron al Karnos of Achas Bashana, the blood that was sprinkled on the corners of the Mizbech HaKetores in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Mishkan, Midam Machat, as the Kippurim, Achaz B'Shana, once during the year, Yechapar Lovel Derasechem, Kodesh Kodeshim, Hu L'Hashem. Once a year, this Avodah is performed, and the very next sequence of Psukim, beginning of Parshas Kisisa, Vaydab B'Shana Moshe Leimor, Kisisa Esrosh B'nei Yisrael, V'kudehem, V'nosu Ish Kofer Nafshal Hashem, V'kodosam, there was the donation of the half shekel that was given. And we read a Parshas Kalam, and it's been a Parshas Kisisa, juxtaposed to the Avodah of Yom Kippur. So you see there's a special inyan of giving Kofer Nefesh on Yom Kippur. We let's talk about Vora Mesim. Ki Hashem bochin levavol shem hayezah meis chai, gam kin hainosin tzedakah. What is the inyan of giving tzedakah for the Mesim? So the pshat is because HaKadosh Baruch Hu has the capacity to discern that when you give tzedakah on behalf of Mesim, so Hashem knows that Lu Yisura, that mace, was still alive, you also would have given tzedakah, so that can invoke a zchus and a kapara for the mace. Mr. Brewer quotes from the Achronim that, okay, maybe that won't work for a Rasha. If the Rasha already has a record, he doesn't give tzedakah, but perhaps because all people do vidur, we have a minhag of reciting vidur with a person, with a goseis right before he dies. So there's a mixus kapara, there's maybe a hafkos shem Rasha at that point, as a Rav would say, but the completion of the kapara maybe comes on Yom Kippur at a later point. Like we said, kapara lam chlei shol elu achayim, asher pedisa elu amesim. That's point number two in the kisser. And furthermore, there's something for us to reflect on. There's an Indian for a person who's alive to daven that the din, that the judgment upon someone who's already passed away should be lightened, should be made less severe. We have instances in Tanakh where that's the case. David HaMelech davens on behalf of, who does he daven for? Anyone know? A relative of his who was killed? A Russia? Avshalom. Avshalom, who pursued David HaMelech, tried to kill him. He davens on behalf of his son that he should have, there should be a kula for him in Gehenim. And likewise, the Mesim HaTzadikim, Lichim HaTzadikim, Mesim who have passed on, who are Tzadikim, can intercede on behalf of those descendants who are alive. And then he goes on to explain that we also have Yisker at the end of Pesach and the second day of Shavuos and Shemini Atzeres. Why? Because those are days where we read Kol HaBachor from Parshas Re'eh. And it says over there, the pasuk ish kamat nasiado, every person should give according to what they're able to give. So that's a remnant of tzedakah, and therefore appropriate also to find its way into Yisker or as part alongside Yisker. Nojin matanos l'tzedakah v'kin shenon tzedakah noga litna bavur neshamos. We're already giving donations to tzedakah, so we might as well do it together on the occasion of the neshamos. She Yisker osam alkim tova, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu should remember them. And that will also be a good zchus for us that we will be the beneficiaries of their zchuyos. Okay. So, and then he says that everyone leaves. Anyone who has both of their parents should leave during the time when the shul recites Yisker. Okay. So there we have the background of Yisker, that there's an Indian dafka, especially on Yom Kippur, to have a kapara even for the mason. So this is based on the Ramah. And Dr. Moshe has this in Simtaf Reish Chav Aleph. Like I said, from the Rishonim, in particular, Marival. Marival says something very interesting. In Simon Kuf Tari Aleph, this is in the Dr. Moshe. The Lakach Nikur Yom HaKippurim, B'Lashon Rabim. You ever think about that, right? We call it Yom Kippur. We also call it Yom HaKippurim, right? So why does it have that dual nomenclature? So he explains, Yom HaKippurim, the plural is the Kapara for the Yachid as well as for the Chaim as well as the Mason. The Chaim as well as the Mason. In other words, the very reason that we give it that name is because it's not just us, but the people who are passed on also require kapara, even though they are no longer with us. Even though they are no longer with us. Now, that's has a few other sources that point to it. And on Rosh Hashanah, for example, we have in Zichronos that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is poked kol yitzurei kedem. He remembers, Zichronos is about HaKadosh Baruch Hu remembering everything that's ever been done, anything that we've done. That's the context of Yom HaDin. But Poked Ko Yitzurei Kedem, he also remembers all creations, Kedem meaning time immemorial, going all the way back to the time of creation. Der Chaim Siddur explains that that's talking about the Din on the Mesim as well. Rosh Hashanah has a Din on the Mesim also. This is found also from earlier sources. Rabbi Aaron Kala quotes this, Mishnah Rabbi Aaron. Right? It says in the Gemara, why is it that we don't recite Hallel, the Malach Yashar, ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, why don't they recite Hallel on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds, it doesn't make sense, it's not a time for Hallel. Sifre Chaim, Sifre Mesim, Psuchim Lefanav. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is sitting there with open books, Book of Life, Book of Death. So it's not a time for Hallel. Hallel is time for celebration and rejoice. That's when you say it. Now, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur is a little more sobering. So usually we translate that as Sifre Chaim, Sifre Mesim. The people who are going to be inscribed in the book of life, people are going to be inscribed in the book of death. But no, Sifre Chaim, Sifre Mason, there's a book of those who are alive and the book of those who are dead. And both of those have a shaychus to Rosh Hashanah and to Yom Kippur, apparently. And the Mason, because they are judged on Yom Kippur also. And there's on Rosh Hashanah, there's an opportunity for a kapara for them as well. One more side note, very interesting. Rav Shechter quoted a couple years ago, tshuva from Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan, Choshen Mishpat. in Nachal Yitzchak, that we find that if when does the a person who is gola to an ir miklat, he kills accidentally? Yeah, Menachem, when does he get released from the ir miklat? Everybody knows when. You know this? You're learning Makos. Yeah, Josh.
The 49th year, 50th year.
No.
When the Kohen Gadol dies.
The Kohen Gadol dies, exactly. Okay. So you can go to ir miklat, that'll protect you. How long do you have to stay until the Kohen Gadol dies? Okay. What about if a person dies before the Kohen Gadol? So the halacha is he has to be buried in the ir miklat. However, when the Kohen Gadol dies, the person is exhumed, he's taken out of the ir miklat, and he can be brought to burial somewhere else. So what does that mean? So basically, Chana explains, because even though normally, maybe it's not the standard that one who is mace has a chance to achieve kapara, but when there's agav the kapara of the individuals who are alive, even the person who is already dead and buried in the ir miklat can achieve kapara. There's an inin of the kapara of the tzibur that can also subsume the kapara for the mesim as well. And that's what's going on in Yom Kippur too. So we have in the ir miklat as a parallel to what takes place on Yom Kippur. What you see from the from the ir miklat is a parallel to what you see on Yom Kippur as well, that the mesim also can achieve kapara. So we can also add that the minhag Yisrael, right, is to light a yahrzeit candle for a person who whose parents are deceased, right? Even if it's not their yahrzeit, right? People they light a yahrzeit candle on the yahrzeit. People light a yahrzeit candle for those who have passed on Yom Kippur, regardless of the yahrzeit could be in July. It's brought in Siman Taf Reish Yud, and the Acharonim explained because the candle also assists in some way for the kapara of the niftarim. Again, coming back to the same point that Yom Kippur is a day of kapara, not just for us, but also those who have passed on. Rav Scheinberg, just one final point, really. Rav Scheinberg suggests that the fact that we bring a kaparis on a fetus, right? You ever read in your Yom Kippur Machzor? Yeah, you ever see the details of how many chickens you're supposed to bring? So you probably just read what you need to bring, right? You bring for yourself one chicken, okay? Or one sum of money equivalent to the chicken or equivalent to a meal that you would share with an ani. But a woman who's pregnant, the minig is for her to bring multiple kaparas, maybe multiple chickens. So what does that mean? How do you have a kapara on a baby who wasn't born yet? So it could be that there's gilgulim. And those gilgulim are now finding their way back into this world through the fetus, and they need a kapara as well. One more expression of this inyan of the Yom HaKippurim for those who have passed on. Okay, so now let's get down to business. What does this all mean for us? And what does this have to do with what I'm thinking about when I walk out of shul during Yisker? So Yisker highlights the need for kapara. L'chor, the pshat would be that at least in the first year since death, if a person dies, Rahman Aslan, in July, so maybe he did his vidoy, but his kapara that he normally receives on Yom Kippur hasn't come to full fruition because it's July. It's not October. It's not September. So it's not Tishrei, so he hasn't gotten that chance yet. So we understand that we would want to highlight the outstanding averos and try to get atonement for them on this day of Yom Kippur when it rolls around the first time after the person died. So it's very interesting, by the way. The post will also say that the first year in the first year since the person died, the children should also walk out during Yisker. If you have a parent, maybe you lost a relative, it's brought down in Achronim that they should leave. If it's the first year, within the first year since the parent died, they do not say Yisker, they walk out with everybody else. Moshe Feinstein says no. Moshe Feinstein says those people should stay in, but that's certainly counterintuitive. If there's any year that a person is lacking kapara after they die, it's the first year before Yom Kippur has passed. But regardless, the following years, right, they got the kapara the first time, right? Maybe the kapara is needed right after death to completely achieve the atonement that they did not yet have an opportunity to complete when they died in July or whatever. But this seems to be a recurring theme every single year. The Mashmos of the Poskim certainly suggest that it's called Yom HaKippurim, a kapara for the Chaim and the Mason, no matter how many years ago they died. So what is this perpetual kapara every single year? So Rav Palev explained to Rabbi Senter as follows. There's something else at work here. It's not simply about reaching Yom Kippur and you haven't yet done so when you're niftar in July. It's more than just the averus of the last year of life that are not accounted for. Actually, kol yitzurei kedem, like the lashon of the Machzor and Rosh Hashanah, every action of every person, in theory, can have immeasurable and infinite reverberations that persist so long after the person has passed away, generations and generations moving forward into the march of history. We only see or perceive a narrow view of our actions, the here and now, and even when Chas Hashem, we say something just, you know, hurtful about another person. Okay, it's lashon hara, it's terrible. But the information that's passed on or the negative impressions that those words create, we have no idea where or when it's going to stop. We can't ever hope to figure out where it's going to spread to, who's going to repeat it, to whom, how much the broken telephone is going to distort or change it for the worse, and what damage it's going to cause. There's no way to know. It's quite scary when you think about how extensive it could be. The seeds were planted with a single avera, and the results continue to expand. And so the need for kapara, we could say, potentially, is it's larger than life. It's larger than life. Rahman Aslan, the damage can fester even after a person passes on from this world. Another illustration that comes to mind is what Ramosha says about cheating in school. He says that if you raise your GPA with dishonesty and Gnei Vazdas, and as a result you finish with honors or whatever at graduation, and you're hired based on your GPA or whatever accolades you achieve in school, for a job beyond what otherwise you would have been recognized for. So it means that every penny you make for your whole life going forward is, you know, shmecks of gazela, because it's attributable to dishonest causes that ultimately led to you having those privileges based on whatever grades you got, whatever marks you received and you graduated. And whoever hires you is counting on you to be someone who you aren't, because you're really a 3.2 guy and not a 3.8 guy. And you got that through cheating. So a person has to think about the reverberations can go so far beyond one simple test. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's infinite discerning awareness of all of creation, the Hashgacha Pratis that addresses every single one of us, takes into account the myriad results of our actions. And so the next generation has to participate the first year, many years later, as it were, in the kapara process of those who are no longer with us. And it's Yom HaKippurim in plural. That alone is something to reflect on. That alone is something to reflect upon. It's really a new dimension when the Kobol says that mentioning the Mason, the kids are quoted this, is Machnia Libo Shel Adam. It humbles a person when we consider the gravity of our actions and their implications long after a person has died. That's very, very humbling. Chaim Shalevitz in Sichas Musar on page Lamed Zion has a different twist on this that goes into our midos, not just our actions. Right, not just you said something and it did damage and it's the gift that keeps giving, but even our midos, just a matter, I'll give you a mashal. Let's say you have a person who appreciates davening, says every word, and really takes tefillah seriously, but he has a flaw. We all have flaws. His flaw is that consistently he shows up 15 minutes late to davening, and every Shabbos it's in the middle of Pesukah Zimra, and he's always catching up and he was skipping. But whatever he says, he says faithfully. And he doesn't say a word to anyone through the entire davening. Very, very serious about his tefillah. So this kid comes with him to shul every week. And you know what? Sees his father davening seriously. But kids are very perceptive and they notice that still something's missing. The guy who comes late, all right, you know, he sleeps through his alarm, whatever, you know, but he wants to be there. He wants to daven. But okay. What the child sees is that it's important to my father, but it's not the most important thing, because he never comes late to the baseball games, never comes late to work. So I see my father takes it seriously, but there's still something lacking in his seriousness towards tefillah because he comes late every time. So that's generation number one. Generation number two, that kid who what rubbed off on him was a chisaron in the value of tefillah. So he maybe comes on time to davening, but now he talks during davening. Whatever he's saying, he says it with kavanah, but he takes breaks in between and schmoozes with his friends. So the next generation, the third generation, already, you know, you can see how it's eroded. The third generation comes late to davening and talks the whole time. And again, ultimately, there's a seed that has germinated. It was planted two generations earlier that still carries some responsibility. What happens in the grandchildren? So Chaim Shalom says that's also kapar la'am chi Yisrael. That's also elu achayim. The Elohim Mason, they also need kapara. there are far-reaching implications. I want to suggest that this is the Gemara in Brachos, Daf Yud. Anyone remember this Gemara? Yeah, they made a song out of it, a beautiful song. Ki ein biltecha. Ki ein biltecha. Omer Yehuda bar Menasseh al tikri ki ein biltecha ela ein levalo secha. We say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this pasuk comes from Shiras Chana. Hashem, there is no one like you. There is no one other than you. Ein biltecha. So there's another layer of meaning the Gemara says. Ein biltecha also sounds a lot like ein levalo secha. Aaron, you know what that means? Levalo secha? Baloi. Levalot. What does that mean, levalot?
To like go around. I don't know, it's sort of like travel, like tour.
So we use it like in the context of tourism. It really means to almost to kill time or to spend time or waste time. Right? So it found its way into vacation, right? How are you going to spend the summer, right? How are you going to be mevaleh the summer, right? So it meaning time passes, time goes on, time gets used up. Okay, baloi, the talis baluya is lush on the poskim. If you have a worn out talis, you need to get rid of. What do you do with the strings? Okay, so ein biltecha, Chana says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, no one is like you. Ein levalo secha, nothing can outlive you. Nothing, no time, nothing in time can surpass you. Shlokim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, midas basa v'dam, maisi yadav mevalon oso. Whatever a human being creates, if you build a building, if you make a garment, under, you know, protected from the elements, that item will outlive, will surpass the creator of it, right? The Empire State Building was built about 100 years ago. There's no one alive who was part of the construction team, right? And you know, hopefully it'll be there for a long time. So that's me supposed to be done, because Baruch Hu is just the opposite. Everything that he creates is Hashem who surpasses all those creations. HaKadosh Baruch Hu mevala maisav. So that's a simple pshat. But in reality, what we see over here, there's another layer of understanding. Midas basar v'dam, ma'aseh yadav mevalon oso. His actions actually outlive him many generations forward because of how they have reverberations and how they can continue into the future. So that's the takeaway for Yisker, Rabbi Osai. That's the takeaway from Yisker. Yes, we should spend a moment or two thinking about these things. When you have that quiet time, instead of just schmoozing and disrupting the flow of ruchnius, don't go out the main doors of the shul where everyone else goes. Don't go out to a side room. Find a place where you can think, where you can reflect, or learn, and appreciate that my actions matter so much, and they will matter far into the future. And then consider a bosai. If it's true about Averos and Kapara, how much more so must it be true about mitzvos? How much more so is it true about mitzvos? As Chazal say, Mi the Tovim Ruben, the Aser Sedirbos Hashem says that he remembers Averos for three or four generations, but his notes are Chesed La'alofim, right? He remembers for 2,000 generations. Mi the Tovim Ruva Lo'ovai U'Lashomrei Mitzvosai. Okay, we have it in the Yurkim Lomidas Arachim also. But Lo'ovai L'shomer Mitzvosai in the Aseres Dibros, that 500 times over, we reap the benefits of mitzvos generation after generation after generation. And sometimes you can come to Shemayim and they'll show you zechuyos you never even knew you had because they were already playing themselves out in with your descendants or with people who watched you do something. Who benefited from your mitzvah. When you do a mitzvah, you also only see a small picture. But we need to think about the big picture. The smallest action can spawn greater impact than you can imagine because we don't take ourselves seriously enough. Otherwise, we would put more effort into our tefillah, more effort into our learning, because we would see, we would appreciate how far-reaching they can become. A nice word to a person can improve their entire day and allow them to be more productive and positive. Someone greets you with saber upon miyafos when you walk into the room. It gives you confidence and motivation to do your best. And it can turn on, and in turn, they can pass on a bright attitude to someone else who needs it, maybe even more, and so on and so forth. The positive examples we set for others, just by doing our best, bein al makom and bein al machavero, who knows who's watching and gaining from that? How many times have I personally been inspired by someone else's kavanah and tefillah, or the gentle way in which they spoke benachas and with a noble refinement of your Shemayim? When I was in yeshiva, I would occasionally daven next to a certain chavrus of mine, and I learned things from him that I want to say completely honestly, I incorporate almost on a daily basis with the image of how he used to daven in mind. I'll give you an example. He used to come to shul, and we discussed this as an avoda before. He used to come to mincha. Let's say mincha was 2:30, the base measure 2:30. He would be there ready to go with the siddur open at 2:28. And he did something unimaginable. Ready for this? Yitzi, you know what he did? He started saying Ashrei 2 minutes before the chat. Because you know what? There's a big Yitzhar. Every Yitzhar has a name. This Yitzhar's name is, I'm not allowed to start saying Ashrei until the chazan gives a klop and only leaves me 45 seconds to say the whole paragraph. Right? I got there 5 minutes earlier. No, 5 minutes earlier. What do you mean? I have very important messages to check on my phone because the chazan hasn't klopped yet. So it's also to begin saying, that's ridiculous, right? Ashrei is such an important tefillah. It's so important. We say it before every tefillah, right? So wouldn't it make sense to at least give yourself 3 minutes to say it so you can actually finish the words with a little bit of kavana and prepare for davening? It helps you focus, helps you. We say Karav Hashem L'Karav, Chol Asher Yikru V'Emes. We remind ourselves that Hashem is close to us and will answer anyone who calls out to him faithfully. Ritzon Yirev Yasa, Hashem is gonna fulfill the will of those who are Yerei Shamayim. Right? Reflect on these things before you daven. We can only do that if you have 3 minutes. This chavrusa of mine always started Ashrei before the chazan did. And as a result, his tefillah from beginning to end was totally different. And to this day, when I show up early to davening, hopefully every single day, Bezos Hashem, I have that in my head. He's going to come to Shemayim. I never told him this. He's going to come to Shemayim. And I can't say too much about my own davening, but a little bit. He inspired on a daily basis, not just me, but now 30 of you guys listening to Shir with an idea to spark a little more kavan and tila. And they're gonna hand them on a silver platter, golden platter, a diamond studded golden platter. Look at all this olam haba you earned. And he's gonna say, what do you mean? And then he said, look, you said Ashrei. And he said, I said Ashrei? I go straight to olam haba because I said Ashrei? He said, no, you don't understand how many times Rabbi Schnall in Shir every other year repeated the same Shtickle Torah and Mr. Shem, I should be so glad many years of Talmidim. And every year, a few more guys began their tefillah with a little more kavan. I'm being forward thinking and hopeful and trying to reinforce, do this. Okay. For a little thing. Gemara, the Medrash says that if Ruvain knew that the video recording was going, and that it would be written in the Torah that he came back to save Yosef, and that it was, had he successfully done so before they sold Yaakov into slavery, then he would have put Yosef on his shoulders and marched him home to Yaakov Avinu and saved Yosef, right? If we perceived, check out what Yaakov Kamenetsky says on that post. It's not just about Gaiva that he would want all the attention, but if we knew the effects of our little actions, we would take them so much more seriously, and because we'd understand that the reverberations are so, so far-reaching. So to be much from Rabosa, let's just finish up. To understand better the notion of giving tzedakah, baras karas neshmasam, the kids are mentioned as chus, that Hashem assesses, he's the bochin levavos, that the nifter would want to give tzedakah if he could. You give tzedakah, yisker, ba'al haskaras neshamos, and our yeshiva, even those who are not avelim or haven't suffered a loss, Baruch Hashem. So we say special mishberach for the Rosh Yeshiva, who have been here for the last 100+ years, not to mention for Tzahal and for the Shoah. But okay, so there's opportunities to be know the tzedakah on behalf of people who have died. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu provides a schus for the niftar because he would give tzedakah if he could also, and we are able to invoke that schus by giving tzedakah on their behalves and with that inspiration coming from the niftarim. That's a big chiddush, right? What we know, Chazal tells Hayom la sosom ol machal kabel tzchar. Now is the time we do mitzvahs. After a person passes away, there's no more chance to get tzchar. We're taught that once a person passes from this world, from olam hazeh, doesn't matter what you could have done or should have done or would have done, time is up. You guys know the story of the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon died, I think, Chol Moed Sukkos. The Talmidim who were at his deathbed recounted that he was crying. He's crying. And they asked him, what are you so sad about? You're going right to Olam Haba. You're one of the greatest Talmid Chacham to live in many, many, many generations, many, many centuries, perhaps. And he cried. And he looked at his tzitzis and he said, you know why I'm crying? Because in this world, a pair of tzitzis costs a few cents. It's all it takes. And you can earn a measurable eternal reward. But once you go to Shemayim, time is up. There's no more opportunities to get that. So what does it mean to earn a schus in the future? So it's true. We have a concept, Brom Zaka Aviv. The actions of a child count to bring a schus to a father. There's another term brought in this context. It comes from a Gemara in Bava Basra, Bra Kar Davua. The son is an extension of the father. But the Lashon Kar Davua, it's his leg. Rav Hudner, I believe, explains that it's because through the mitzvahs of a son, the father's legacy keeps moving, keeps running, keeps moving forward. Still a chiddush, but the way Rav Shechter's often said it is that the child giving tzedakah demonstrates that he learns something from the parents to give tzedakah. And that's the source of the chiluk in the mitzvahs that the child performs. So yet again, a merit can accrue to the parents, even if the parents aren't aware that they gave that lesson over. There must be something in the example that they provided that has ingrained in the child this value, and they deserve credit for it. And that's mamish what we're saying. When a person gives tzedakah balas karas, a nishmas, a parent, right? What they're acknowledging is, I learned to do mitzvos. I learned to appreciate my Yiddishkeit from my parents, who ultimately, you know, for most people, are the strongest foundations in my observance of Torah mitzvos. Maybe not for everybody. But whatever I took from them, when a person does a mitzvah with that li'ilui nishmasim in mind, it has that same reverberating effect. Just like the yizkor, again, the kapara is for the mesim, but the zchuyos are also for the mesim, because anything you do ultimately is attributable on some level, a kernel, to an earlier generation, which, almost, that's how we started. That's what Rabbi Kanievsky said. Use these moments for hakaras hatov. Use these moments to appreciate where you have what you have from, where that has gotten you, where it can take you, and stop. To appreciate your parents, but also to appreciate that we're sitting here being mispalf ba'ad ha-mesim. So the kapara is still alive and necessary. And likewise, the zechuyos are very much at hand. Very much at hand. Schwab writes in his sefer on Ian Tfila, when a person says kaddish for a parent, it's as if the words are coming out of the mouths of the father or the mother as well. The Yehi Shmei Rab has come from the words of from the mouths of the parents. Chafetz Chaim says from also Shmuel Rozovsky, Nemtzal quotes in his Sefer Chanukah, a similar idea in Sefer Mesim, right? That we also in the Egel Aruf, the same idea, Mar Makomos that we've been discussing. It's a takeaway. When we remember people who have passed on, we should wonder what the legacy in Ruchnis that they left behind was, and what the legacy that our lives will leave behind for our own children. That's what we should think about during Yizkor Bosei. Don't use it as a time just to schmooze. It can be so much more productive, so much more impactful, and you'll return into shul to begin Musaf, not having to refocus and start all over again, after having been pulled out to the rest of the world, but still being on the level of a malach that every one of us is supposed to look for and achieve on the entirety of Yom Kippur.